WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In 1913, Denise Chong's grandfather made the voyage from China to Vancouver in search of work. Because of restrictive immigration laws, he left his wife behind in China. He yearned for companionship in Vancouver, so he purchased a 17-year-old concubine from China. She forged her papers and met him in Vancouver. My guest, Denise Chong, is the granddaughter of that concubine. Chong grew up knowing very little about her family history. The door to the past opened in 1987 when Denise Chong and her mother were in China and tracked down the surviving members of the part of the family which remained in China. Chong tells her family history in the new book, The Concubine's Children, the story of a Chinese family living on two sides of the globe. She told me what it meant to be a concubine.
A concubine is the lesser wife. First, the man has his wife who's chosen by his parents, and then any other wife he chooses to take are his concubines. So for my grandmother, right away, it was a mark against her. There'd be no wedding ceremony, no wedding biscuits. She was a woman who was paid for, bought, purchased. So, and she would be joining his household, and she would be at the whim and in the servitude of the number one wife. And even any children that the concubine would have would address the wife as the mother.
How did your grandmother become a concubine?
My grandfather left China to make a living in North America. You know, the south of China was like a teapot that poured out men like him in the early part of this century, because China was overrun by bandits and warlords, and even whole families would join thieving gangs. So to make a living, my grandfather went abroad. He had his wife at home. In America, the laws against arriving Chinese had really slammed the door shut in immigration. So it became, just of the men who were here, it became a very bachelor society. And my grandfather became lonely. He didn't frequent the brothels. He decided to buy himself a concubine, to have a woman come from China to join him in Canada. That was a 17-year-old girl. It was my grandmother. She stepped off the boat to meet the man she'd been sold to.
Who sold her?
My grandmother had been sold once already. She'd been sold as a child to a stranger, so she was already a child servant. Whenever her family felt that they couldn't feed another mouth, then the daughters were usually sold like tea. So my grandfather was already buying a child servant to be his concubine. Now, he didn't have the money to actually pay for her. He was a man of just a middle-class peasant abroad. He didn't have the money to pay for her false Canadian papers that would get her into the door. So to pay for all that, she arrived off the boat and found that she was indentured as a tea house waitress.
And what were her responsibilities as a tea house waitress?
First, it was a mark against her to be a concubine. To be a tea house waitress was an even deeper scar, because in those bachelor societies of the Chinatowns all up and down that west coast, the tea houses were where men gathered. And the better a tea house did depended on how attractive were the waitresses, and, you know, how flirtatious they were with their customers, and how young they were, and how well they could hold conversation. And in those days, a waitress was seen as one and the same, almost as a prostitute, that they were there to woo men to spend money.
So in the meantime, your grandfather had two wives. He had his first wife and the wife with the higher stature, who was in China.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had his concubine, your grandmother, who was with him in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife at home in China was living, a rural life with her children. And the concubine in Vancouver was living this life of alcohol and gamblers and tea houses. And, I mean, it just couldn't be further apart.
Yes. And yet the notion that bound them together was that they were of the same family, and that the concubine was still under the authority of the wife at home, that one day the concubine would live her life out under the same roof as the wife. So that loyalty kept my grandmother bound to my grandfather for a time, enough for her to hand over her wages made from waitressing, to hand over her tips even, so that my grandfather could take it and, you know, meet his first loyalties, which were to the family at home.
So your grandmother actually supported the family in China?
Yes, although my mother did not really understand that as a child.
What about you? Did your mother tell you when you were young that your grandmother was a concubine?
I always knew the term. I was always aware that my grandmother had a false, came into this country under a false Canadian birth certificate. I didn't really understand the notion of more than one wife as a child, but I knew that among the photographs in the bottom drawer of my the cedar chest in my parents' bedroom upstairs were these two girls posed arm in arm. And I knew that that photograph was of my mother's two sisters. I knew that the grass poking up at their feet and, you know, tickling their ankle socks, I knew that soil was China.
The two daughters in China that you saw the photograph of, these were children that your grandmother, the concubine, had, but had to send back to the wife at home in China.
The wife at home got wind that my grandfather had taken a concubine and had even a household in Gold Mountain, two daughters that had been born in Vancouver. So when she got wind of that, my grandfather feared she'd commit suicide to save face, so he hastened home with these two daughters. And while they were there living in a, you know, would be a, just a, an adobe house in a small patch of land, probably not bigger than this studio, while there the concubine became pregnant. And she goes to a blind fortune teller who can see the truth, and he says to her, "You're carrying a son." And sons are what, you know, the concubine felt would redeem her. So she gets it into her head. She remembers she's got this false Canadian birth certificate. She gets into her head that she wants this son born in Canada. She convinces my grandfather. They leave the two girls behind. 3 days after the boat docks back in Vancouver, in a back alleyway of Chinatown on the second floor of a tenement, my mother is born.
You write in your book that your grandmother, the concubine, never really spoke much about the past, and that your grandfather didn't either, and he died when you were very young.
Mm-hmm.
What about your mother? Did she speak much about your grandparents?
When I would ask my mother about the past when I was a girl, it was to get her to tell me the stories from her girlhood that I could relate to as a girl myself. But those stories, I only looked for the, you know, when I could laugh and when I could cry. And I remember that the stories all seemed to me to be sad. You know, I could picture my mother at the side of her mother at the mahjong table. I could see her in the loneliness of the opera theater, seeing a Chinese opera that she'd seen over and over and over and over again, but that her mother wanted her to watch because so that she'd know where she was. I'd picture my mother walking home down a back alleyway, having to walk through the garbage in the alleyway and the men off Skid Row looking for, you know, things that restaurants had thrown away. My mother'd go up a dark staircase and she'd live in a rooming house. So all those stories carried tears with them. And then as I grew older and I started to leave those stories, my girlhood behind, my mother began to talk less and less about the past. Eventually, you know, when my grandmother died in a car accident, it'd be like a guillotine coming down. Years would pass and I would have this sense that my mother almost leaned with her back against the door that would keep out the past. Almost a sense that the windows had even been painted shut over the cracks. You couldn't even lift the window up.
Your mother grew up in Chinatown. Your grandparents lived in Chinatown. How much connections did you have with Chinatowns when you were growing up?
When I was little and we would go to Chinatown to visit my grandmother, Chinatown was still it still had a semblance of activity. This would be in the early 50s. The Chinatowns would be dying over this period because of there was no new blood coming in because immigration still had not really opened up. By the time we moved away from Vancouver and were living in the north of British Columbia, Chinatown, for me, became the embodiment of all the fears I had that surrounded my grandmother's past. So when my father we'd drive down the 500 miles to Vancouver, we'd call on my grandmother, and my father would pull up to the curb of whatever rooming house was her latest address, and we'd stop, and we'd have to go, he and one of the kids would go up the staircase, and we'd knock at my grandmother's door, and we'd wait to see if she'd answer. And if she didn't answer, we knew that she'd had too much to drink the night before. And we'd have to come back when she'd dried out. So those dark, dark staircases and the anxiety of waiting to see if the door would open to us. Then when we do come back the next day, I'd be sitting in her room. My parents would go run an errand. Maybe my grandmother would be cooking for us in the communal kitchen. And we'd be sitting in the rooming house, and there would just be the tick-tock of the alarm clock on her bed, or a mouse skittering behind the dresser, or the shuffle of old men past her door. So to me, Chinatown was something, again, that it was the past that I wanted to leave behind. It was frightening to me as a child.
My guest is Denise Chong, and she's written a new memoir called The Concubine's Children, the story of a Chinese family living on two sides of the globe. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Denise Chong, and she's written a memoir about her family. It's called The Concubine's Children. I'm going to jump ahead in the story a little bit. In 1987, you were living in China, in Beijing, mm-hmm. with your husband, who was there on assignment. He's a reporter. And when you were there, you decided to try to track down the part of your family that stayed in China, your grandfather's wife at home. Mm-hmm. as she was called. Mm-hmm. And you were able to do that. You were able to find the family. And then you had to convince your mother to come to China and actually meet that part of the family.
Right.
One of the siblings that your mother met in China was her sister. It was one of the daughters that your grandmother gave back to the wife at home in China.
Yes, it was the eldest, my mother's eldest sister, who was Vancouver-born, but who would live out her life in China. The first thing that sister had clutched in her hand a photograph for the moment that the two sisters would meet, and the photograph is a picture of the concubine holding her firstborn on her lap. It's taken in a studio in Vancouver, and my aunt turned this crackling yellowed photograph over and showed it to my mother, and you know, drew her line under some words printed in English, and the English says "Made in Canada." So right away, my aunt then just turned to my mother. The two sisters turned to each other, and my aunt said to my mother, "You and I drank the same mother's milk." And when they walked arm in arm to go to the house that my grandfather had built, the moment we my mother and I saw this grand two-story house, which was such a far cry from the dark, dingy, dank rooming houses that my mother had grown up in, the moment we saw that, the moment we walked through the door and saw on the wall were photographs of my mother as a child. On the wall was a huge regulator clock that had been made in Canada. The moment we saw that, my mother then knew that this was where we could begin to make sense of her life in Canada. This was where the family story would become one.
So we have two families uniting here. One is the family of your grandfather's concubine,
mm-hmm.
who was your grandmother, and the other is the family of his wife who stayed in China. And that's the family that you met when you were in China. The family in China didn't think very highly of your grandmother, the concubine.
This is the difficulty of writing the family memoir and wrestling it flat onto the page. There are as many different versions of events and opinions of people as there are members of the family. My relatives in China revered my grandfather. The house stood as a monument to his memory. It was him from afar who had kept alive the sense of family, kept them, sustained them through hard times, gave them reason to go on.
Although he was rarely in China.
Yes, he only cradled his newborn son from the wife at home for a couple of months before he left. He never saw he would not see his wife or his daughters from the concubine again. But they revered my grandfather. What they did not know in China was that the money that my grandfather sent to China was money that he came to collect from my grandmother. So when my mother arrived in China, she knew what the sacrifices her mother had gone through and the price that she had paid of going to the pawn shop, of trying to make her earn her living gambling, of eventually succumbing to after hours demands of the tea house waitressing. My mother could not upset the family's reverence for my grandfather by saying to them, look, you know, what you have here is the work of the concubine. Because it would have destroyed the sense of the family in China. It was better to leave them with the sense that it was the wife at home who had sacrificed in her loneliness and anguish for her husband. It was better for them to think that my grandfather had been the one who'd sacrificed by living out his life alone, by not having the company of a wife.
So she never told them the real story about how her grandmother, the concubine, sent the money to China?
No, she did not.
Do you have any idea what impact your visit had on the part of your family that stayed in China?
It sadly kept alive for them my grandfather's dream that anything must be better than China, that going abroad must be better. No matter how good things are in China, things abroad must be brighter. It's like always, you know, moving to the next valley. That if they went abroad, then they could secure an education and a future for their children. They looked at us with great longing. Looked at me and thought, well, couldn't our children be like that? Couldn't we go to Canada or America and set down the roots of the tree if it produces blossoms and leaves like me? So it was as if the cycle had just gone full circle. My grandfather's son in China was saying the same things my grandfather did a generation ago. Could we think of a way to get his daughter and sons out of China? He was negotiating with a middleman that would get his daughter to Panama. He was trying to think of a way to get them into the States and Canada ultimately.
Like so many people who are the grandchildren of immigrants, you grew up really knowing very little about your family past. I mean, your family had basically decided, as you say, to shut the door on the past. Mm-hmm. But now you've written a family history. You've learned as much about that past as you could. How have you been changed by that entering into the past?
I think when you reconcile and make peace with the past, you chart a more independent course for the future. Yes, I'm sorry that my grandmother had to, you know, stepped off the boat at 17 and was already sold, and I'm sorry that she had all those marks against her before she'd even had any control over her life. But at the same time, I see what is good about that sense of family, that it spans generations, that what the sacrifice of one generation. Sometimes it's not repaid in that generation, but it's repaid in the next. So though my grandmother had the shame of being a concubine, the pride has been restored because I've gone to China. I've seen the fruits of her labors. I've seen that house that was built, the bricks that were sanded to go into it, the tiles that were painted, the paintings on the wall to embellish the house. I've seen that for her dead eyes, you know, if that's possible. So I've taken from a sense of family that and a continuum of generations that it is possible to reconcile with the past.
Denise Chang, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Denise Chang is the author of the new memoir, The Concubine's Children, The Story of a Chinese Family Living on Two Sides of the Globe. This is Fresh Air.